the first ever Scots Independent website Burn Supper. Over the programme, we hope to give you a flavour of a real Burn Supper, including The Immortal Memory, Toast to Scotland, Tam O'Shanter, and A Puckle Sangs by Jill Bowman and Rod Patterson, with piping from Gordon Duncan, all courtesy of Green Tracks. At this time of the year, Scots the world over meet to pay tribute to Scotland's national bard, Robert Burns. And we hope that our effort will act, if you have never attended a Burn Supper before, as a suitable introduction, or as a substitute, if for whatever reason you cannot attend one this year. One thing I will promise you, this will be the real Mackay, and not the type of Burn Supper referred to by Hugh McDermid at the start of his great poem, A Drunk Man Looks at the Thistle. You canna gang to a Burn Supper even, without some wizened scrunt or a knock knee Chinee turns round to say, "Hem haggis, very good," and 10 to 1 the piper is a cockney. No one in 50 kens a word Burns wrote, but Missa Flyde is Ardy's property, and gin there was his like alive the day, they'd be the last a kennin hon to gee. Cruise London Scotties with their braw shirt fronts, and a' their fancy friends rejoicing, that similar gatherings in Timbuktu, Baghdad and hell nae doot advising. Our Burn Supper winna be like that. The first ever Scottish National Party MP, the late Dr. Robert McIntyre, was proud of the fact that his granny, as a young girl, knew an old man who had known Burns' generation. She asked him what they had thought of Robert Burns. His answer said it all. They revered him. We hope to give you a glimpse of why that was the case, and why we in our generation should honour and revere our national bard. ne'er far your honest sonsy face, great chieftain of the puddin' race. Abune them a' ye tak your place, painch tripe a firm, weel are ye wordy o' a grace, as lang's my arm. The groaning trencher there ye fall, your hardy's like a distant howl, your pin would help the mend a mull in time o' need, whilst through your paws the dews distall like amber bead. His knife see rustic labour dicht, and cut ye up wi' ready slicht, trenching your gushing entrails breath like ony ditch, and then, oh, what a glorious sight, warm, reeking rich. Then horn for horn they stretch and strive, deal tack the hindmost on the drive, till a' their wheels swell kites belived are bent like drums, then all good man maist like to rive, with thunk it hums. Is there that hour is French ragout, or only o' that would store a sou, or fricassee would mak her spew with perfect scunner, look doon with sneer and scorn for view, and sic a dinner? Beer devil, see him o'er his trash, as feckless as a withered rash, his spinal shank a good whiplash, his knee a knit, through bloody flood or field to dash, oh, who unfit? But merk the rustic, haggis fed, the trembling earth resounds his tread, clapping his wally neva blade, he'll mak it whistle, and legs and arms and heads will sned, like taps o' thistle. Ye poors, wha mak mankind your care, and dishes out their bill of fare, all Scotland once nae skinking wear the jopes and luggies, but gin ye wish her great for prayer, gie her a haggis. During his tour of Galloway in 1794, Burns stayed for a few days with the Earl of Selkirk. Burns very much impressed his hosts with his erudite wit and stimulating conversation, and he was asked to say a blessing before dinner. So he recited an old Scots grace which he had altered slightly, which is now known as the Selkirk Grace and used extensively during the Burns season. The Selkirk Grace. Some him eat and canna eat, and some would eat that want it, but we him eat and we can eat, and say the Lord be thankit. Amen.
Oh,
meet tonight to honour and pay tribute to Robert Burns, the National Bard of Scotland. And the first thing I think we should remember is that this is not an action that's in character for Scots. We're not really good at honouring and paying tribute to people. The normal Scottish reaction when they see somebody rising above the generality of people is to sort of mutter among themselves, who do you think he is? Well, a wee bit of luck, I could just do the same as well as him. And yet here we are, and there are hundreds of thousands of people all around the world, not just Scots, millions probably, are meeting tonight and doing the same thing as we are doing. Thinking about Burns, reflecting on him, honouring his memory, and enjoying his work. Why is this then? What is it about this man that has made his own people single him out and treat him in a way that no one else is really treated? Probably it's because he was a man of such variety. He meant something to and means something to everyone. He's complex and he's contradictory, as he himself admits in his letters. He's a man who was intelligent, obviously, educated beyond the norm for the people in his district and his class, a man with cultural interests and with an imagination and a desire for learning. And yet he was tied to unproductive land, sour land, heavy land, cold land, and in his last farm, rocky and stony and gravelly land, and he had to scratch a living somehow out of all these experiences. And still he remained the intelligent, thinking, writing, not just peasant, but a man of culture, a man of learning at the same time. And I think it's because of this complexity and variety about him that everyone tries to claim Burns. Everyone, every organisation, every group can find something about Burns and what Burns said to say, that's right, that's him. Every group who holds a Burns supper congratulates itself on thinking that, isn't it funny, Burns just thinks the same as me. And yet their opinions can differ totally one from the other. He can be a pacifist. Ye hypocrites, are these your pranks to murder men and gie God thanks, he says. And he can be a fire-eating patriot. Does haughty Gaul invasion tend, then let the loon beware, sir. He can be, as he frequently was, perhaps I would think most commonly was, radical, reformist, quietly revolutionary, perhaps, in his opinions and in many of his more profound writings. And I think it's because of the hardship in his early life that he experienced and the contrast that he drew with what was going on in his mind and what he had to do to keep himself and his family going. I think that was what made him concentrate in the early days of his life on themes of injustice and unfairness and the wrong, the indignity of privilege and pomposity. It's that sort of feeling that prompts him to look at the plight of an aged man from the rural background who looks forward really to nothing but death, and who looks around him and decides that man was made to mourn. Oh, what crowds in every land are wretched and forlorn. Man's inhumanity to man makes countless thousands mourn. And he goes on to apportion blame. If I'm designed yon lordling's slave, by nature's law designed, why was an independent wish e'er planted in my mind? And if perhaps this is too dangerous a line for Burns to pursue in the circumstances that he lived, then you get away with an argument if you pass it on to two dogs. One, the ploughman's collie, and the other, the Labrador or Newfoundland pedigree dog of the local gentry. The dogs get on fine. And Caesar, in fact, the genteel dog, is well disposed and friendly and worries about his friend Lewith. But then, to see how you're neglected, how huffed and cuffed and disrespected, Lord man, our gentry care as little for delvers, ditchers, and sick cattle. They gang as saucy by peer folk as I would by a stinking brock. A topic that he takes up in one of his letters, or epistles, as the printed editions usually call them. Very often he writes on those themes in his ordinary straightforward letters. But when he turns it into verse and writes to intimates and friends or people who shared his interests, it's there, I think, you find Burns's truest opinions and truest attitudes. And to a nearby poet, Davy Siller, lived in Muir Kirk, just along the road from Burns in Mochlin. He writes, "It's hardly in a buddy's power to keep at times from being sour to see how things are shared. And while the state and society and economics dictate injustice and unfairness, Burns invites Sillars to agree with him that it's no in titles nor in rank. It's no in wealth like London Bank to purchase peace and rest. It's no in Mickinmuckle Mayor. It's no in books. It's no in Lear to make us truly blessed. If happiness say not her seat and centre in the breast, we may be wise, or rich, or great, but never can be blessed. Nae treasures nor pleasures can make us happy lie. The hurt aye is the pert aye that makes us richt or wrang." And this importance of the human heart and the human spirit and the human capacity for thought and reason, these are the vital elements of humanity as Burns see them, and it's a topic he returns to again and again. Mind you, there are times where you sort of feel that he's maybe overdoing it a wee bit, or being perhaps oversensitive. That would be understandable if he was. And one thing that he did was to kind of put on simplicity, to play the daft laddie, to argue that what he was able to do was just ordinary native wit, and it didn't require any profundity of thought or training or education or anything like that. Whereas, in fact, of course, he wrote and he practiced and he went through various, examples. He would try and write something, it wouldn't work, he'd tear it up and start again. And if he found lines that pleased him, he wasn't above using them several times over in different poems. So he was educated, he was trained, he was practicing his art, but he liked to pretend it was all just off the top of his head. Well, we can all be a wee bit like that. And in his pretense, you find that this is carried into his private inner thoughts and his social contacts. Because in order to succeed as a poet, he wanted patronage, and yet he wanted to enjoy independence, and he prided himself on being independent. And so you get a contrast between the independence that he almost boasts about and yet having to write rather grovelingly sometimes to his social betters in the hope that some of them would give him some kind of subsidy, perhaps even take out subscriptions when he produced his Kilmarnock edition in 1786. Edition of his poems. He does things which are wrong, and he knows they're wrong. And in public he swaggers. Devil may care, bravado is his defence. And in private he goes away and covers his face and hunches his shoulders and worries, and he's ashamed of himself. Now, we've all been there. We all know the feeling, and we've all gone through it.
And perhaps Burns's appeal to us is that we identify so easily and so totally with him. Burns is every man. He's like Job in the Bible. And yet, of course, he is unique. There are things that we shared with Burns, there are things about Burns that we'll never come within light years of comparing ourselves to. We've all shared his views, many of us, but, as another poet put it, what oft was thought but ne'er so well expressed. Burns's capacity for language is a marvellous gift. A gift which he worked on, but he was right up to a point. Without the natural gift, no amount of practice could have ever brought Burns to the peak of poetic skill that he achieved. So his expression, his use of language, commands our admiration. And the themes that he chose to write on command our sympathy. He was, as I've said, against injustice and unfairness. He was against privilege and presumption. He was against cruelty, even to animals, to the wounded hare, to the mouse. He was against bigotry. The unco gid. O ye wha sae gid yourselves sae pious and sae holy, ye've no to dae but mark and tell your neighbour's faults and folly. A useful reminder to the strait-laced parish of Terbolton in which he found himself. And in the face of those kind of censorious opinions all around him, it was interesting that when Burns was asked, or when he told Sellers why he wrote, he said, "I write for fun." And he found great fun in his writings. Well, that doesn't surprise us, because generations after have found great fun in his writings as well. He's an enormously funny man, enormously humorous. And his fun and his humour and his laughter, it's a good, honest guffaw. There's no sniggering going on there. He was a very fleshy man, if you like, in his humour and in the breadth of it. So he wrote for fun. He wrote for fame. He was quite frank about that. To be great, he said, was charming. He wanted applause. He wanted recognition. His talents demanded that somebody, preferably everybody, would stand up and say, "See that fellow Burns? He's a pretty good poet. He's a pretty good lad altogether." And he wrote for Scotland. "That I," he said in a letter to Mrs. Scott, said that he wanted to write for Scotland, and he put it into verse, "That I, for fair old Scotland's sake, some useful book or plan could make, or sing a sang at least." And he tied Scotland in with Wallace. And it's the interesting thing, it seems to me, comes from Burns's writings about his country and about the great patriot of his country, that Scotland and Wallace and Burns go together to this day. They are a real trilogy, a trinity of heroes and exemplars for all Scots for all time coming. But as well as writing for Scotland and the world, because his opinions had a worldwide application and significance, again, this is perhaps a contradiction, because he could come back home from the wide world, and he would write for Kyle, for that part of his own loved Ayrshire that lay between the Irvine and the Doon. And he grieved that nobody had bothered much about them. "Ramsay," he says, "Ramsay and famous Ferguson, Geforth and Tay a Liftabin, Yarrow and Tweed, and many a tune our Scotland ring. But Irwin, Lugar, Ayr and Doon, nobody sing." Well, he sang them. And he set the whole world singing of the scenes of his childhood and his young manhood, and the scenes that he was familiar with. And he did it in the speech of that area, an area which was renowned for the ugliness of its dialect. The blabbermouths of Kyle was a term of derision and abuse that went back a couple of centuries before Burns's time. And yet it's these songs that go circulating around the world and echo off the walls of rooms and halls all over the world tonight. So he honours his country, his district, and his humanity, and his shared humanity with us, because he writes about love in all its aspects. And he gave words to old tunes. He encouraged people to look out and sponsor new tunes, and he wrote words for them, and he did it without pay. And he saved many of the traditions of his people, and he added to them, and he gave us a repertoire, some of which we have heard and will hear tonight. Because he sang of love in all its manifestations, love of women, sometimes dignified, sometimes ridiculous, sometimes successful, sometimes tragic. Love of his friends, love of nature, love of life itself and the joy of life. His trouble was that he was a genius, and he had the curse of genius, because in everything he went to extremes. And he celebrated the joy of love, and he wallowed in the joy of life. And yet nobody felt more keenly than he did the grief that it must end. And the tragedy of parting is something to which he returns. We have reports twice from Jean, his wife, of two occasions when she found Rab in tears. On the first occasion there were tears of laughter as he strode up and down the stackyard, and it turned out that he was composing what turned out to be Tam O'Shanter. And then there came a darker day, when the tears were real this time, and the poem in his mind on that occasion was to Mary in Heaven, and it was the anniversary of the death of Mary Campbell. So he felt very deeply, and it's that depth of feeling that I think we all sense in him. And the respect that he requires, the respect that he deserves, comes out in his last hours. When in his very last illness he would not accept without some recompense, without making some gift in response to balance the books, if you like. When the wee girl Jessie Lewis was kind to him and looked after him and tried to make him comfortable, the only thing he could do was to write a poem for her, which he did. O, wert thou in the cold blast, on yonder lea, my plighty to the angry earth, I'd shelter thee. And the song and the name of the girl to whom it was given have gone into history, if you like. They're there in the books, they're in the memory. That's the kind of man he was. And his early death is something that is, it is a tragic thought, that what he could have done we'll never know. In his last works, he was returning to his old themes again, and he was taking up some rather dangerous causes and opinions, as the French revolutionary early stages, if you like, were taking place, and political unrest, reformist agitation was hitting Scotland. Temperamentally, emotionally, there is no doubt that Burns found himself involved, drawn in sympathy. But as an exciseman, a servant of the government, he had to be very careful, and he came very close to losing his job. And he had to backtrack pretty smartly and lived out the last couple of years of his life very discreetly. But as he said in a letter to one of his supporters, you know my true heart, even though, as he put it, I'm not going to write all that openly about my opinions. Well, in a way it's a tragedy to look back on Burns's life, but of course what a triumph it was to have set the world singing as he did. And here tonight we all sit congratulating ourselves, because like Scots all over, including those who really don't fully understand and don't fully sympathise with them, who perhaps haven't thought it through or analysed exactly how far they really do share his views. But at least they all share one thing, and that is reflected glory. He's ours. Everybody claims him, and everybody is pleased to be associated with him, and everyone tries to touch the hem of his garment and hope that something of Burns will rub off on him. Scotland has no greater attraction than Rabbi Burns. And so we honour him at full popular level. Not just scholars, not just politicians, not just people who've got to make a speech for an evening meeting. A group of trapped miners at Knockshinnagh, when the field fell in on their gallery, they sat waiting for rescue that didn't look like ever coming. And they sat at the bottom of the shaft and they sang Afton Water. So you see, it's genuine. They really mean it. The ordinary people mean it. And they still do. So he sometimes invited criticism. He goes to Edinburgh and is made much of. He wasn't spoiled. He was never made ridiculous. But there were times where the danger was all too obviously there. And he enters into the correspondence with Clorinda, calling himself Solvander, and the whole thing becomes just a little embarrassing. But behind Solvander, who was a very transitory and short-lived character in Burns's life, there was Rab Musgeal, the life and soul of the Terbouton Bachelors Club, the absolute embodiment of all that was best in his people. So you remember him tonight how you will, in whatever guise, carrying whatever opinions, but we can all take pride and feel this deep love and respect and honour the immortal memory of Rabbi Burns. The immortal memory. Thank you.
chanter. When Chapman Billies leave the street and druthy neighbours meet, as market days are wearing late and folk begin to tack the gate, while we sit boozing at the nappy and getting foo and unca happy, we think na on the long Scots miles, the mosses, waters, slaps and stiles that lie between us and our hame, where sits our sulky, sullen dame, gathering her brews like gathering storm, nursing her wrath to keep it warm. This truth fand honest Tam O'Shanter, as he frae airy nicht did canter. All there, from ne'er a tune surpasses for honest men and bonny lasses. Oh, Tam, hadst thou but been so wise as ten thy ain wife Kate's advice, she told thee weel thou was a skellum, a blethern, blustern, drunken blellum, that frae November till October, ae merked day thou wasna sober, that ilka melder with a miller thou sat as lang as thou had siller, that every naig was caught a shoon, the smith in thee got roaring foo on, that at the Lord's house, even on Sunday, thou drank with Captain Jean till Monday. She prophesied that late or soon thou would be found deep drowned in doon, or catched by warlocks in the mirk by Alloway's old haunted kirk. Ah, gentle dames, it gars me greet to think who mony counsels sweet, who mony lengthened sage advices the husband frae the wife despises. But to our tale. Ae merket nicht, Tam had got planted uncorrect, fast by an ingle blazing finely, where reaming swats that drank divinely. And at his elbow, Suitor Johnny, his ancient, trusty, druthy crony. Tam looed him like a vera brother, that had been foo for weeks together. The nicht drave on with songs and clatter, and aye the ale was growing better. The landlady and Tam grew gracious with secret favours, sweet and precious. The suitor told his queerest stories, the landlord's lach was ready chorus. The storm without micht rare and rustle, Tam didna mind the storm of whistle. Care, mad to see a man sae happy, e'en drowned himsel among the nappy. As bees flee hame with lades o' treasure, the minutes wing their way wi' pleasure. Kings may be blessed, but Tam was glorious, o'er a' the ills o' life victorious. But pleasures are like poppies spread. You seize the flower, its bloom is shed. Or like the snow falls in the river, a moment white, then melts forever. Or like the borealis race that flits ere you can point their place. Or like the rainbow's lovely form evanishing amid the storm. Nae man can tether time nor tide. The hour approaches, Tam maun ride. That hour, o nicht's black arch the keystane, that dreary hour he mounts his beast in, and sic a nicht he tacks the road in, as ne'er poor sinner was abroad in. The wind blew as 'twad blawn its last, the rattling showers rose on the blast, the speedy gleams the darkness swallowed, loud, deep, and lang the thunder bellowed. That nicht a child might understand, the deil had business on his hand. Weel mounted on his grey mare Meg, a better never lifted leg, Tam skelpit on through dub and mire, despising wind and rain and fire, whiles holding fast his good blue bonnet, whiles croonin' o'er some auld Scots sonnet, whiles glowerin' roun' wi' prudent care lest bogles catch him unawares. Kirk Alloway was growin' nigh, where ghaists and hoolets nightly cry. By this time he was cross the ford, where in the snow the chapmen smoored, and past the birks and meikle stane, where drunken Charlie Brack's neck bane, and through the whins and by the cairn, where hunters fanned the murdered bairn, and near the thorn upon the well, where Mungo's mither hanged hersel. Before him Doon pours all his floods, the doubling storm roars through the woods, the lightnings flash from pole to pole, near and more near the thunders roll, when, glimmering through the groaning trees, Kirk Alloway seemed in a bleeze. Through Ilkabore the beams were glancing, and loud resounded mirth and dancing. Inspiring bold John Barleycorn, what dangers thou canst make us scorn, wi' tippany wi' fear nae evil, wi' Uscaby wi'd face the devil. The swats sae reamed in Tammy's noddle, fair play, he cared na deals a boddle. But Maggie stood recht sair astonished till, with a heel and hand admonished, she ventured forward on the licht. And vow, Tam saw an unca sicht. Warlocks and witches in a dance, nae cotillion brent new frae France, but hornpipes, jigs, trespays and reels, but life and metal in their heels. A winnock bunker in the east, there sat auld Nick in shape of beast. A towsie tyke, black, grim and large, to gie them music was his charge. He screwed the pipes and garth them skirl, till roof and rafters aw did dirl. Coffins stood round like open presses that showed the deed in their last dresses, and by some devilish cantrip slecht, each in its called hand held a licht, by which heroic Tam was able to note upon the haly table a murderer's banes in gibbet airns, twa span lang wee unchristened bairns, a thief new cut it frae the rape, wi' his last gasp his gab did bake. Five tomahawks wi' blood red crusted, five scimitars wi' murder crusted, a garter which a babe had strangled, a knife a feather's throat had mangled, whom his ain son o' life bereft, the grey hairs yet stuck to the heft, wi' mair o' horrible and awfu', which even to name would be unlawfu'. As Tammy glowered, amazed and curious, the mirth and fun grew fast and furious, the piper loud and louder blew, the dancers quick and quicker flew, the reel, the set, the cross, the cleekit, till Alka's carlin swat and reek it, and coost her duddies to the wark, and link it at her in her sark. Now Tam, oh Tam, had they been queens, ah, plump and strappin' in their teens, their sarks instead of creeshy flannin been snow-white 1700 linen, their breeks o' mine, my ainly pair, that ance were plush a good blue hair, I would ha' gien them off my hurdies for a blink o' the bonny birdies. But withered beldams, auld and droll, rig woody hags would spin a foal, lumping and flinging on a crummock, I wonder didna turn their stomach. But Tam kent what was what foo brawly. There was a winsome wench and Wally, that nicht enlisted in the corps, long after kenned on Carrick shore. For mony a beast a deed she shot, and perished mony a bonny boat, and shook baith meikle corn and bear, and kept the countryside in fear. Her cutty sark o' paisley harn, that while a lassie she had worn, in longitude did, though sorely scanty, it was her best, and she was vaunty. Ah, little kenned thy reverend granny that sark she coughed for her wee nanny with 2 pund Scots, 'twas our riches, whatever graced a dancer witches. But here my muse her wingman coor, sick flichts are far beyond her poor, to sing who nanny lap and flang, a souple jade she was and strang, and how Tam stood like een bewitched, and thought his very een enriched. E'en Satan glowered and fidged foo fain, and hocht and blew wi micht and main, till first ae kipper sign another, Tam tint his reason a'thegither, and roars oot, "We'll den cut his sark!" And in an instant all was dark, and scarcely had he Maggie rallied when oot the hellish legion sallied, as bees biz oot wi angry fyke when plundering herds assail their bikes, as open pussies mortal foes when pop she starts before their nose, as eager runs the market crowd when "Catch the thief!" resounds aloud. So Maggie runs, the witches follow, wi mony an eldritch screech and hollow. Ah, Tam, ah, Tam, thou'll get thy fairn, in hell thou'll roast thee like a hern. In vain thy Kate awaits thy coming, Kate soon will be a woeful woman. Now do thy speedy utmost, Meg, and win the keystane of the brig. There at them thou thy tail may toss, a running stream the darn across. But ere the keystane she could mark, a faint a tale she had to shack, for nanny far afore the rest hard upon noble Maggie pressed, and flew at Tam with furious ettle. But little wist she Maggie's mettle. A spring brought off her master hale, but left behind her ain good tail. The carlin clocht her by the rump, and left fair Maggie scarce a stump. Now wha this tale of truth shall read, elk man and mither son, tak heed. When e'er to drink ye are inclined, or cutty sarks run in your mind, think, ye may buy the joys our dear. Remember, Tam O'Shanter's mare.
Thank you.
Burns' supper would be complete without a toast to Scotland. It is very appropriate, because no toast to Scotland would be possible without Robert Burns. Following the Union of 1707, he reminded Scots that they were Scots. In a letter to Mrs. Dunlop, dated 10th April 1790, he wrote, "Alas, have I often said to myself, what are all the boasted advantages which my country reaps from the Union that can counterbalance the annihilation of her independence and even her very name?" Burns firmly put himself on the side of Scotland. Scotland is our mother country, regardless of where we stay. Be it among the soft rolling hills of the borders, where the towns still ride their marches every year, through the Lothians, the most fertile part of Scotland, which suffered often at the hands of invading English armies, to Fife and Angus, the heartland of the Picts, Aberdeen and Buchan, where the Gedscot's tongue is strongest, Inverness, the capital of the Highlands, now made a city, to the shores of Caithness and Sutherland, scene of some of the worst of the Highland clearances, Orkney and Shetland, where they still remember years of Norse domination, the Hebrides, where Gaelic makes its last stand, down to Argyll, where the Scots first came from Ireland in the 5th century. Glasgow and its surrounding area, the former industrial heartland of Scotland, through Ayrshire, which gave us our national bard Robert Burns, into the wilds of Galloway, along to the town of Dunfries, where Robert Burns died in 1797. It is all Scotland, peopled by Scots, a Scotland which is re-emerging as a nation. The Union of 1707 might have seen the end of an auld sang, but we in this century are on the march towards a new sang. A Scottish Parliament sits once more in Edinburgh, and hopefully we are on the gate towards the full independence sought by the Scots Independent and the Scottish National Party. Scotland, a nation again, we are marching on that road. We can only toast Scotland with pride on the day we are fully free and a nation again. So with humility, I would ask you the Scotland to toast the Scotland still to come. The land of cakes, as Robert Burns called their beloved country. Please raise your glass and toast Scotland.
Thank you. is Alistair McIntyre of Electric Scotland, and I just want to give a vote of thanks to the Scots Independent newspaper for this Burns Supper production. In particular, I'd like to thank Peter Wright, the chairman of the SI, who gave the introduction, as well as his readings of To a Haggis, The Selkirk Grace, and The Toast of Scotland, and also to his wife Marilyn for her excellent rendition of Tam O'Shanter. My thanks also to Jim Halliday for his outstanding Immortal Memory address. Thanks are also due to Green Tracks for providing the songs and pipe music for us to record with this production, from Joe Bowman and Rod Patterson for the Burns songs, and Gordon Duncan for the pipe music. This production is donated to the internet for all to enjoy. All we would ask is that if you are going to make this available on your website, you link to www.scotsindependent.org in acknowledgement. I hope you've enjoyed this production, and we look forward to producing more in the months ahead. Thank you.